today on Building the Open Metaverse.
It makes sense to me that VR and the metaverse are so closely associated, because I think when we're in virtual reality, and especially when you think of the promise of virtual reality, that is kind of the ultimate manifestation of the dream of the metaverse, because we are fully, you know, we are fully present inside of a virtual reality. We have an avatar, we have a body, and yeah, we're fully in a different, completely different universe, and everything about it is synthetic and virtual.
Welcome to Building the Open Metaverse, where technology experts discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hosted by Patrick Cozy from Cesium and Mark Petit from Epic Games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our show, Building the Open Metaverse, the podcast where technologists share the insight on how the community is building the metaverse together. Patrick, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. Really looking forward to the conversation today.
Yeah, this one is for you, because you always talk, you want to know when we're finally going to have holograms. So we decided to invite somebody who has an answer on that. So we're super happy to have with us Christina Heller. Christina, hello and welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And you are the CEO of Metastage, which is, and we'll let you describe what Metastage is. It's all about volumetric capture and virtual production, and it looks like something from the future. And so we're going to be curious to hear your point of view and how practical and what's the steps to make this a reality. So welcome to the show. And so maybe the best way to start is to, our usual question is, describe to us your journey to the metaverse and a little bit of your background. We want to hear it from your own terms.
Yeah, sure. So, I've been working in production almost my whole life, definitely different forms of media, started off in radio in college and moved into television production and then independent filmmaking, and I was excited about both, the technical and creative aspects of these pursuits. And, at one point, I started becoming very interested in the intersection of media and technology. And I was ruminating on sort of where that intersection lived when, as fate would have it, I felt drawn to go to the Sundance Film Festival for some reason. I had never gone. It wasn't like something that I did regularly, but I was turning 30 and I wanted to do something special, and I wanted to go to the Sundance Film Festival. And this was Sundance 2014. And there I got to try, the DK1 of the Oculus headset. And it was just like the answer to the questions that I had been asking about where that intersection of media and tech might be found. And that kicked off what has now been, a 7-year pursuit of creating content for, XR, the metaverse, whatever you want to call it.
So what's your own definition of the metaverse? It's always a trick question, I know, but we have to ask it once in a while.
I think the metaverse for me represents our virtual realities. And I don't mean that in the term of the VR headset that you put on your face, but more, the life and worlds and that we inhabit in the virtual space. So I think right now it's, represents a lot of different mediums in which we engage virtually with one another. But we are starting to see a lot of those begin to intersect. And I do think that inevitably, we are looking at a world where, there is almost a virtual, there's a whole virtual universe to explore and a digital reality that exists over top of our physical reality that we can just sort of tap into at any given moment. And certainly in the metaverse, we have superpowers, which is very exciting, the ability to teleport and maybe even time travel. So it certainly frees us from a lot of the constraints of the physical world, although there's still some ways to go to beat the graphics and fidelity of the good old physical reality.
That's a great perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, I like your definition. I like both the virtual worlds and also overlaying the digital information on our real world. Christina, I'd also love to hear more about the origin story and kind of your founder's journey with Metastage.
Yeah, so, Metastage was really a group of people coming together to decide they wanted to take a chance on what at the time was a kind of a crazy idea. We were, the team at Magnopus had done some work with with the Microsoft holographic capture technology for the Blade Runner VR experience that they had developed and built. And Microsoft approached them and said, you know, would you be interested in launching the first, you know, not even US-based studio, the first, you know, studio in the Western Hemisphere to commercially offer this holographic technology to production companies and agencies and really anyone that's interested. And Magnopus, you know, thought that seemed like a great idea, but, you know, felt it would be more impactful as an independent company, you know, and that they didn't want, you know, anyone to think that, you know, that they were competitive with Metastage. They just, you know, it wanted to be its own thing, and found, you know, some investors who are excited about, you know, pioneering technology, new ideas, and this, you know, potential partnership to get it off the ground. And then there was this question of, okay, so we know we want to do it, and we know we're going to work with the Microsoft technology, which is the best volumetric tech, you know, in the market. Who's going to actually do it, though? Like, who's going to actually? And then that was when I got contacted. I got sort of a message, you know, out of the blue, the kind you always hope would happen. And at this point, I had been, you know, I had moved on from my previous company, which was called VR Playhouse, and which, you know, I had also led, and which was also involved with production services for XR Tech. And yeah, I was approached with the opportunity to launch and lead Metastage, and it was just one of those things you don't say no to. So, you know, I'm in an interesting situation where, you know, I didn't have to go around and sell the dream. The dream was already dreamt, but then myself, along with my founding team, you know, we really did start the company from complete scratch. You know, they didn't, you know, we didn't even have a website or anything when we started. And that was at the beginning of 2018.
That's cool. Yeah, that's a unique founder story there. And congrats on all your success. So as you know, I'm a total beginner in volumetric capture, and I've just learned that Mark is also a beginner. So I was wondering if you could, you know, just educate us, you know, what is it? How does it work? What's the state of it?
Sure. So volumetric capture technology allows, you know, creators and producers to bring real performances, authentic, real human performances, into virtual mediums in full three dimensions, you know. So holographic capture, it often gets confused with motion capture. It's not that we're scanning a person so that you can then rig and animate that, you know, puppet later. Instead, it's someone going out on the stage, whether that's an athlete, a musician, a public figure, or even Patrick, Mark, you guys, going out on the stage and us using an array of cameras. In our case, we use 106 machine vision cameras to capture that performance from every angle and then render it into a small streamable file that can be sort of enjoyed in many mediums, but certainly all of the ones that require three dimensions. And when you engage with these captures, it can be like the person is there right in front of you. So it's incredibly impactful for anything anything where only the real thing will do, where you don't want a simulated avatar talking to, or you don't want a simulated, you know, video game type character. And then certainly it also has a lot of very interesting value for preservation, archival, and legacy purposes too.
So what's the underlying technology? I mean, it looks like you're capturing a lot of data. So where do you think we are in terms of maturity of the technology, you know, precision, quality, and...
Well, I can speak for the Microsoft tech, and I can tell you that we are a commercially ready, commercially viable system that gets you extremely high fidelity captures at very small file sizes that you can integrate into common devices. So we'll just use, for the sake of this conversation, we're going to talk about capturing Patrick. So, you know, Patrick comes on the stage, and his, you know, the goal is that he's going to give, you know, a manifesto about the metaverse, which he can then present to his investors or stakeholders on a Microsoft HoloLens. But also, not everybody has a HoloLens or a Magic Leap, so they need to be able to engage with it on an iPad or a phone. What's beautiful about the Microsoft tech and the tech we use at Metastage is that same, you know, Patrick basically goes on the stage, you know, we approve his wardrobe and hair ahead of time, make sure that he looks, that it's all pretty volumetrically friendly and that it tests well and that the results are what he expects. And then at that point, we say action, and he goes into the manifesto. While he's speaking, we're capturing him using these 106 cameras from every angle. And we're capturing, as you said, a massive amount of data, 30 gigabytes of raw data per second in some cases. But for Patrick, it's easy. He's just out there. He's talking. He's being himself. And he nails it on the first take. Great. Patrick's done. Off he goes. And, you know, we typically say 2 weeks for turnaround on our processing, because we are juggling multiple projects simultaneously. But if Patrick was our only priority, we could turn it around in, you know, a few days. And he would have, you know, this beautiful 3D capture of that speech that he could integrate into a variety of different points of distribution. He can bring it into Unreal. He can bring it into Unity. He can integrate it into the, you know, onto an AR phone, an AR app for the phone. He can do it in WebAR through 8th Wall. He can bring it into any of the VR headsets. He can put it on a looking glass. He can bring it into Unity and do virtual production with it and build like a big commercial with sweeping camera moves. So that was an extremely long answer to say that I believe that our system is commercially viable, and we're working with clients, you know, week in, week out, who have interesting ideas of how we might use it. And really, that's the big question, is what is the most compelling use cases and creative, you know, ideas that this tech can serve?
So I still have a question, though. Would Patrick be as fuzzy in the volumetric capture than he is in real life?
Would he be what?
As fuzzy, you know, from a details perspective.
Actually, yes. You know, I will say that, like, beards do represent, are a little challenging, because, like, so our system is, it's a mesh-based 3D model. And so it's always looking to put together a geometric reconstruction of whatever it's capturing. And so beards do present a little bit of a challenge. There might be a tiny artifacting around his beard, but I guarantee you, you'd be impressed, like, not at a point where it distracts from the quality and impact of the capture.
That was brave. I thought you'd have picked me, because I would not have this problem.
He's above you on the screen right now, so I'm looking more directly at him than you.
So that's a fascinating technology. I think this is also those kind of technologies you said. It's data intensive, and, you know, Moore's Law is still working for us. So, you know, it will progress, I'm sure, both the software and the processing software and the hardware will make it, you know, even more valuable. So what role do you see this potentially? You know, do you think we can get to a point of a real-time processing for that? I mean, have you, you know, what's your take on how far we are from being able to kind of use this in a live environment?
I mean, live volumetric is a very exciting prospect, because that is like teleportation, right? If Patrick is standing in LA, but he's being beamed to Philadelphia, that is very cool. And the tech actually does exist. There are live volumetric systems right now. The issue is largely about quality right now for that. You know, I think that especially with the kind of clients that we're serving, which are pretty high-end clients, like A-list actors, sports figures, et cetera, they're very particular about their image, and they're going to want it to look, you know, really good, you know, and I think the volumetric tech is still a little tough on the quality side, but there are a lot of very smart people who are working on that day in, day out right now, because I think that if you look at, you know, some of the things that Unity's doing and other, there's a lot of ambitions around being able to bring live performances and that whole industry into the metaverse. And volumetric technology is certainly one of the key tools to do that.
So I was telling Mark, I've rewatched every Star Wars movie since Thanksgiving. So yeah, so I'm super into the holograms nowadays. So I'm curious, could you just give us some numbers, like, what's the resolution on the capture side, and then also maybe on the state of the display technology?
Sure. So we're capturing using 12 megapixel sensors, and when we're outputting, we're not outputting it. We're almost outputting at true 4K. It depends on if you want that. Like, if you're doing a WebAR activation, for instance, and it says QR code, you're not going to want it at 4K, because it'll be too big to load in the system. So we, you know, we're We are exporting based on what our clients are looking for in terms of distribution. So at our highest quality output, we're at, you know, almost 4K, and we export usually up to maybe 60,000 polygons for a capture like that. Beyond that, it actually doesn't improve the quality. It actually begins to just look a little bit anyways, beyond 60,000, you're not getting added quality. But if you were doing it for something that required the smallest file size we can possibly produce, then we would be bringing it down to maybe, you know, 10,000 polygons at 1.5K resolution for that, because, you know, as you can imagine, streaming volumetric holograms through a web browser is a miracle of technology that, you know, you don't want to give yourself any added complications when doing.
In your mind, you know, the technology was born kind of a VR, right? As you mentioned, the original problem from, I think it was Ben Grossman on Blade Runner, yeah. So what are the use cases, and, you know, and more generally, you know, how do you see that relationship between VR and the metaverse? I mean, they seem to be closely associated, but I'm curious to have your point of view on that, and, you know, how volumetric capture could become more of a, you know, mainstream form of media, you know, maybe outside of that VR.
It makes sense to me that VR and the metaverse are so closely associated, because I think when we're in virtual reality, and especially when you think of the promise of virtual reality, that is kind of the ultimate manifestation of the dream of the metaverse, because we are fully, you know, we are fully present inside of a virtual reality. We have an avatar, we have a body, and yeah, we're fully in a different, completely different universe, and everything about it is synthetic and virtual. But that being said, right now, you know, if you look at, you know, what, like the video gaming industry, that is also a metaverse, and arguably like a more relevant modern day metaverse, because people do actually spend hours upon hours and hour like of their life in that world, and feel very immersed and connected to it. And like the question, like, does it really matter that they can't, that they can look around and they're not actually in that environment when they're still just like inches away from a screen playing, you know, for hours on end? So, but I do think certainly virtual reality is the science fiction dream of the future metaverse. And as we all know, there are a lot of big companies working at making that dream a more compelling kind of experience. You know, and you know, as far as where I think volumetric capture plays into that, I mean, you know, our assets do work on a Quest or a Vive Focus, or certainly on the more high-end headsets. And the place where I'm seeing the most, like, the most interesting applications for it at the moment are in the training sector. So, you know, there's plenty of evidence to speak to VR training being more effective than passive video-based training. There's more concentration when people are in headsets. The interactive, you know, component means that, you know, their actions change the outcome of the narrative, and therefore there is more retention, especially if the training experience is highly realistic. So I've been out there, you know, talking with people who are making VR training experiences and saying, the quality of your virtual trainers and the humans in your experience should match the level of realism of the rest of the experience. And I'm an advocate for bringing volumetric trainers and or highly trained actors, you know, into these experiences, so that you can, you know, teach people about behavior, human emotion, and just have more credibility. So I'm very excited about that in the short term, because I do think, if we look at VR today, VR training, you know, VR training is a perfect example of how VR is being used today. It's not that I'm going in and spending like 12 hours just surfing, world hopping, although maybe some people do. It's, you know, I'm going in for a purpose. I'm going in because I'm going to train for a half an hour for my job, or I'm going to go in because there's a specific meetup or a specific event that I think seems really interesting. And so, yeah, for me, like, VR training is a very practical kind of immediate application for our tech.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. So in your hometown, Los Angeles, you know, there seems to be a virtual production stage every other block right now. So how is there an intersection between volumetric capture? How does it complement the virtual production technology?
You can use volumetric captures in a virtual production workflow. For anyone who might not be familiar, although if you're listening to this podcast, my guess is you are, you know, virtual production is where we're doing, you know, we're creating framed content, but we're using virtual tools to do that. And everyone loves to cite it because they did such an incredible job. But like The Mandalorian did, you know, their entire series with a massive LED wall projecting all of the backgrounds and all of the environments for the shots. So often those environments are built in, you know, Unreal or maybe Unity, and those environments, which you're building in a 3D game engine, could be ported into a VR headset or, you know, and immediately. And I feel like that's an underutilized kind of benefit of the virtual production workflow. It's like, I would love to be able to explore some of the sets of Mandalorian or some of these folks in VR as if I was standing there myself. So that's like one method of virtual production is like I'm standing on an LED stage and I'm doing a performance and there's these, you know, these environments that are being kind of broadcast behind me. That being said, then, if you wanted to put more characters in that scene that weren't physically there when you shot the script that day, you know, you can take these volumetric characters and place them into the game engine. And now you have, you know, background characters or other folks populating those environments, and you can also, you know, angle them and twist them because they're also 3D assets themselves to do, you know, to make the scene however you'd like. And we have a really great case study from 2021 where we worked with Samsung and Charlie XCX on a Buds 2 commercial, where the entire Charlie XCX performance in that commercial, which was aired on TikTok and social platforms, was a volumetric capture of Charlie that we did at MetaStage. I'm happy to go into more detail about that, but it was exciting for us because we certainly knew we could use these for background characters, but it was like the first time we had, at least in MetaStage, seen it being used for a hero asset.
Yeah, that looks like, you know, the more speed and resolution we get, the more value in virtual production workflows. Actually, there's a lot of VR scouting and since it's a small world, you know, we co-developed those VR scouting tools with Magnopus. And so they all come from the same roots at Epic. So switch gear a little bit because, you know, this podcast is, we're trying to get professionals like you to talk about open standards. And, you know, and so Is volumetric capture based on existing open standards, or does it require specific data sets? And how do we get to a point where this data can be used in a very, you know, across multiple platforms?
Yeah, there's a group actually called like the Volumetric Formatting Association that was launched at the beginning of last year and it was. They managed to get an alliance of different volumetric technologies to come together to at least have the conversation about volumetric standards. That being said, as it is now, I think the closest thing we have to something like open standards is the fact that, you know, we have this format that happens to work in a bunch of different commonly used platforms. You know, like I said, you can use it in Unity, Unreal. We have a WebGL output. We recently worked with Snap to do the first ever volumetric Snap lens for their platform. So, you know, the team at the Microsoft Mixed Reality Capture Studios, which is our little division inside the bigger Microsoft empire, you know, is work really wants our tech to be as device agnostic, platform agnostic as possible, but it is still in the Microsoft, you know, proprietary format, and it's hard. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, like I think that if you look at some of the techniques to do volumetric video, they're not even all uniform. You know, we do a mesh-based avatar, but some people use voxels. You know, it's interesting to imagine, like, how could you get a universal standard with when you're not even, you know, exporting the final asset in the same, using the same mechanisms. So, but anyway, but I guess that's what the VFA is all about. And I certainly am a fan, and I think I wish them the best of luck. And, you know, I think the more we can get, make volumetric an easy workflow for our partners and clients, you know, the more projects we'll see being made and distributed, which is good for us and good for everybody.
Okay, so we have to go bug Mr. Steve Sullivan, right? Who is the...
Yeah, he's the general manager.
Who runs the effort at Microsoft. So we'll do just that.
But Mark, Christina did touch on an interesting theme that we've seen come up a few times in the podcast, which is the pace of open standards. Right? Christina, you're saying that, hey, some folks are used polygons or triangles, or other folks will use voxels. So we're maybe early in our innovation, right, for volumetric formats. And then there's always this question of, well, how fast can you standardize, and can you possibly standardize too quickly? So I don't know, Christina, if you have a take on that given the current landscape.
You know, it's interesting. I come at this from, you know, a content and project background as opposed to like a hardcore technology background. I've had to, over the course of, you know, like I said, since I had this, that light bulb moment in 2014, you know, I've had to really up my game when it comes to understanding, you know, technology, VFX workflows, tools. And, you know, as evidenced by this podcast, I can hang, but that's actually really not my particular area of interest and focus, you know? So I like things that are decentralized, and I want, you know, to create more freedom for creators and innovators, but it's like, I don't stay up at night thinking about universal standards and things like that. You know, I like to think about, you know, what we could do once some of these barriers are broken down. You know, for me, one of the more frustrating things I think about a lot is just like the limits of our display technology right now. You know, we're capturing a lot of very interesting people at Metastage, like I said, athletes, musicians, public figures. But when I still feel like the method for engaging with these holograms leaves me wanting more, only because I know what we're capturing, and then seeing it like on an iPad, like through an iPad placed in my living room, is cool, but it's not what I know it could be and will be, hopefully. And so we put all these things away in like the archive cloud, you know, with a prayer and, you know, prayer in my heart that someday we will be able to view them like you do in these Star Wars movies, like in their full glory, you know, and presence. So those are the kinds of things I think about. It's just like, man, what we capture is so cool. But then often I'm left a little bit just not as excited when I see how it is now versus what it could be in the future. And that's a long-winded way to not answer your question.
Actually, you brought up an interesting topic, which is, and you know, I mean, we are geeks, Patrick and I, and this podcast is about geeks, but we're also curious to have somebody like you. I mean, you're running one of the most advanced, I mean, it's a technology in its infancy, it's very cutting edge, very advanced, and you come as a woman from a production background in this world of geeks and advanced technology. Were there any specific challenges there, or did you find any... Share your experience with us a little bit, because I'm sure there's a lot of stories there.
Oh, for sure. Actually, I feel like for the most part, I don't have a lot of stories about being like wildly underestimated or being treated. And of course, I've got a few, you know, like I remember back, you know, when I would get mistaken for like a booth babe, you know, and things like that those things actually have not been the main thing, the main challenges I've run into. And I overall, the XR industry has been so like amazing to me and has supported like me and my career from the jump. So, but I will say what was such a weird thing to learn was just there's so many like weird terms to describe, to describe various aspects of like VFX and technical workflows that can be so intimidating and so convoluted. And it feels, and I guess a lot of industries have this. It's like they almost created their own secret language to confuse and create a barrier to, you know, so that other people won't understand what they're talking about and will be intimidated by the conversation enough that they won't even attempt to get involved. You know, I feel like when I first, especially with Metastage, you know, when I was first learning about the software and, you know, the technology to create holographic captures, there was a crash course in a lot of those key terms. And I'm still not even as fluent with them as, say, our head of production, Skylar Sweetman. But I think that's kind of one of the more frustrating things is, you know, the terminology and the language we use and the fact that it feels deliberately confusing and it kind of keeps people on the outside that have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's another angle of trying to be open, make sure that can be shared. So you have a point. I mean, there is something about the XR industry I've noticed that where, you know, like EW with a whole feminine lineup of speakers last time around with, you know, Joanna Popper from HP, yourselves, Rafaela Camera, all those things. So it looks like that industry specifically seems to be very aware from a gender perspective. So it's good to see.
Yeah, and it might just be because it really had its latest incarnation in 2014. Like, it really, 2014 is when Facebook bought Oculus, and, you know, and that was what really kicked off the first, of the most recent hype cycles. And, you know, I think that because we were building it from scratch at that point, and we had gone through a lot with other industries, there was more of an emphasis on creating an open, diverse, and inclusive atmosphere. And then certainly leaders like Joanna Popper and Rafaela and others fight very hard to keep it that way. And yeah, it's like I said, I love the XR community, men, women, non-binary, everyone in it.
Yeah, and absolutely. And Patrick and I struggle because we do have a white male problem on this podcast. When you look at the lineup of people we get naturally to, so we try to go beyond, but it's not easy.
Well, we appreciate that you're that you're aware of it, acknowledging it, and trying to bring on a diverse set of guests. And you
people
know,
remind us all the time.
What'd you say?
People remind us all the time. So.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask one more question before we go into a wrap up. I mean, Christina, if you fast forward, you know, 5 years or 10 years, I mean, tell us about the state of volumetric capture and volumetric rendering. Will we be able to rig these captures like you can do with motion capture today? Will holographic rendering be as affordable as my phone? You know, tell me, what do you think?
Well, definitely. I mean, you can, like already at Metastage, we'll do a T-pose for almost all of our shoots, which you can add a skeleton to and rig. And that allows, like, let's say you're doing a training simulation. If you want to have a rigged, you know, asset in the background, you know, for us, it takes no time at all to do a quick like T-pose. So we just do it already. When I look at the future 5-10 years down the road, I think, you know, certainly 3D spatial technologies will be much more prevalent than they are today, which means that volumetric capture will be a common tool, the same way that using, you know, cinematography is for flat mediums. You know, volumetric video will be used in spatial tech to holoport and broadcast in every vertical that you can imagine. And I do think that we will certainly have consumer-based volumetric in our homes if you want to capture a family moment in three dimensions. But I still think there'll also be a place for high-end production of volumetric content as well, where you're like we have now at Metastage, there's a sound stage and a professional production process to get super high quality performances and captures. So, you know, volumetric video is really the cinematographer's tool for the metaverse. It's the documentary filmmaker's tool in the metaverse. And it will be, you know, a really wonderful way to capture and preserve, you know, humans and moments that we can enjoy in this next medium. So, yeah, it's a privilege to be here on the front row watching it all come to life.
Yeah, no, I do believe it's at the infancy. You know, we see so much in capture, the epic with MetaHuman is all based on capture with the Megascan and photogrammetry. So it feels to me that we're at the very beginning of all those things. They're going to converge. I think one day we're going to get passes a threshold in compute. I think AI automating processing. We can teach machine how to process and guess a few things that. So I think that we'll see some code. Right now it looks like science fiction and it looks like a little bit impractical, but I'm definitely convinced that give us a few years and it'll be very impactful, because like sampling to music, I mean, you know, synthesizer were good, but really things started to be interesting when we could sample sounds. And I think for the metaverse is going to be the same. The more capture, the more bits and pieces of the real world we can get in, and definitely like full performance video capture is going to be critical. So firm believer. Just don't know when. Don't ask me when.
Yeah. Well, you are both most welcome to come visit our studio anytime. And, you know, we've got some exciting announcements this year on the horizon. So stay tuned. We're expanding a little bit this year. So, you know, like I said, it's just really cool to be in the front row and helping bring this important tool to people who are excited to use it.
Absolutely. So our last two questions, you know, which is our ritual. So is there anything that you would have wanted to discuss that we didn't ask you about?
You know, I'm not feeling a burning yearning for another question, but as soon as I hang up, I'm sure I'll come up with something.
You're exactly like me. I'm super smart, but it takes time. And is there any organization or person, you know, that you want to give a shout out to?
For sure. I mean, I'll give a shout out to Magnopus. I know I gave him a shout out earlier, but like, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today if it weren't for Ben Grossman and the team at Magnopus. And I also want to give a shout out to Lap Van Loo, their CTO. He is a rare blend of technical genius and down to earth, awesome human, and I just think Lap is the best. So I'm giving them both a shout out today. But man, I could give so many people shout outs, because like I said, I feel like this industry is full of so many incredibly inspiring and kind people.
Well, Christina, thank you so much for being with us today. It's it felt like a little bit of a glimpse into the future, and we're so thankful you took the time to be with us today. So
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. I think 98% of what I know about volumetric, I just learned.
Nice. Job well done.
Absolutely. And thank you, everybody who are listening. We got, you know, the momentum is great. The feedback is great. Keep the feedback coming. The things we like to hear, the things we don't like to hear, doesn't matter. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear about. Keep on reviewing, sharing, and rating, and let us know everything. So thank you, everybody. Thank you again, Christina. It was a treat to have you today.